right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there and good evening. Firstly, big love to Demi and the team for taking us through the afternoon. It is Monday, October 13th, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside the one and only Ruby Walsh.
I better live up to that intro. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7, Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly look ahead to Ireland's must-win clash with Armenia at the Aviva tomorrow evening. Austin O'Malley joins us to reflect on a weekend of dramatic county finals. And of course, myself, Shane and Austin will debate our weekend sporting highlights while we listen to Alan Cawley rant about his lowlights.
And we want to hear your highlights too. Highlights only. What was your big sporting moment of the weekend? Text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
No pressure, Alan Cawley. No, I'm bring a bit of positivity.
I'm always in a positive mood. I've no real lowlights. This weekend, the referee's performance in Lisbon wasn't great. I could get into...
That's an understandable lowlight.
Yeah.
An acceptable lowlight.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go there. I have two very good highlights. Ruby will actually appreciate one. And I'm going to explain it.
Drum roll.
I'm going to explain it half and half with Ruby. So...
we'll make a cup of tea, Austin. Don't worry.
Yeah. He probably has a feeling where I'm going with this. Keith Donoghue. Unbelievable ride on Stumptown over the weekend, but I'm going to let Ruby explain the race and how prestigious it was. Is that right, Ruby?
Where was it, Al?
Yeah, you don't want to pronounce
Czechoslovakia.
Sorry, was it run in the late 80s?
It was a funny name, the Prada Viduka or something.
It was in
Ruby?
The Velke Pardubice, I believe, off the top of my head, Ruby.
Oh, well done, Shane Dawson, you nailed it.
See, that's why you're the pros. I'm only the kind of the novice.
It was in Czechia. It was in Czechia, not Czechoslovakia, just to be clear, before we've the foreign desk on to us.
Okay, sorry. You're getting me into all sorts of trouble. I'm going to become a lowlight.
Go back to your lowlights. Come on now.
No, it was the Velka Pardubice in Pardubice, which is about an hour and a half outside of Prague. And if you go to the train station, make sure you get the one to Prague and not Budapest, as Willie Mullins once did. The Pardubice, which is 140-ish years old, is 4.25 miles. Very famous race, huge fence, the fourth fence, it's a fence called the Taxis, which in the days prior to health and safety might have been... quite a bit substantially bigger than it is now.
There are actually
two graves beside the Taxis. It's an incredible race. And Shane Donoghue Keith Donoghue and Gavin Cromwell won it yesterday afternoon with Stumptown. And he was lucky at the Taxis, lucky again at the seventh fence, which is a double of hedges onto a laneway where actually Risk of Thunder many years ago got rid of Richard O'Muddy when he was a short price favourite. But they delivered yesterday in great style. So big effort for them to bring a horse to Chechia's. About nearly 4 days in a horse box.
Wow.
Bit far to fly one. Well, not cost effective to fly a National Hunt horse that far. But fair effort out of them and delighted for them. And Keith gave them a brilliant ride.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Keith Donoghue, so that caught my attention over the weekend. And my second one is...
Sorry, just on that venue, because I can't let this pass me by without... Ruby, do you still wake up in cold sweats thinking of this race course in particular?
I have no grow to go back to Pardubice anyway. I was
you
there twice.
The one and only Ruby Walsh.
Well,
had a bad day, did he?
Two bad days there, Al.
Got to the fifth fence the first time I went there. And it's like the canal turn, but going the opposite direction. It turns to the right instead of the left. So I was actually following Richard O'Muddy. So when he went out to his left to run back to his right to jump it, I followed him. But my horse didn't jump the jump. He ran down in front of it. So I cannoned into the one coming on the inside and wiped out 19 of the 23 runner field.
I was
popular in Chechia in 1998. And I went back in 99. To ride the Risk of Thunder, and I was riding in the race before it, and I broke my leg. And it was a plastic running rail. The junctions were open, and I collided with the running rail and broke my shin. But I remember they put me on a stretcher, and they put me into the ambulance. You know the old small mini high-ace vans?
Oh, yes.
The little small ones?
Yeah.
So that was literally the ambulance. So the stretcher literally fitted in. They put me on the edge of it and just slid the stretcher into the back of it. And away with you to the hospital in Pardubice. And I left. And not on conventional crutches. No, the old wooden sticks you'd see in the war. Oh, they God. Go up under your armpits.
Yeah.
I left on a pair of them.
For the listeners, I didn't know any of that. So he's probably devastated I brought up Keith Donoghue.
Was that in Czechoslovakia when you were riding, Ruby? Was
it? It wasn't. It could even have been the Czech Republic when I was there.
Is the Ruby? I know, like, I'm not comparing in terms of how dangerous the horse riding is and the game, and you know all that. But is there courses, race courses, where it's like a footballer kind of thinking a bad away day or a bad away ground where you kind of dread going to?
I suppose there is, Al, when you think about it. But it's not. It's like anything, especially with jump racing. The better the weather, the faster the ground, the faster the horses go. And like anything, the faster you're going, the more the sudden stop hurts of a fall. Mm. It's never the fall. It's the sudden stop. And the faster you're going, obviously, the bigger impact there is. So it's more dry weather, fast ground, worse falls, wherever that may be.
That's an insight.
Yeah, no, it's well explained. You were teeing up a second highlight.
I do have a second one, and I think it's so important to mention this because we'll get into the nuts and bolts of the game on Saturday night, yep. But one player who stood out so much, and not so much his performance was excellent, as everyone could see, but I don't think people realise when you're not playing week to week and at top level football, how you can only be training. He's only had a handful of minutes, and to put in a performance in the magnitude of that game, Seamus Coleman just epitomises everything good about Seamus, and in terms of his professionalism to keep himself in right nick, in right order, that when you're called upon. And I actually thought some of his comments afterwards was so telling in terms of towards the manager, how disappointed he was that he wasn't in the last campaign. Still backs himself, mentioned that he has fire in the belly, that whether you're playing against Andorra or you're playing against Germany, it should have the exact same feeling whether you're 20 making your debut or you're 37 coming near the end. And I thought, just for young kids watching, or for even the general group that are there now, who there's been a few things labelled at them, it was unbelievable, his interview. I was sitting there going, this is what you want, this is the kind of stuff we've always had from all the players over the years. Yes, we may not be the talented, but in terms of our drive and our desire and professionalism, I thought it was absolutely brilliant from Seamus. And for him to stand up and basically say to the manager, I was disgusted that he didn't pick me in the squad, and come out and then what was brilliant, the final part of it, I thought was, that's all good and well being annoyed and disappointed, but he says, did his talking on the pitch.
Yeah.
And so many people kind of, you can have different kind of, people go to Instagram now, social media, cryptic messages. He didn't say a word. He was probably annoyed for the last 3 or 4 weeks, waiting for the phone to ring. And as soon as he was getting his chance, he was going to show them, I'm still the man. Mm. And I thought it was an unbelievable interview and performance from Seamus.
Yeah, actions speak louder than words. And he had the actions that were going to speak way louder than any words. But what about his reading of the game, Alan, and his understanding of the game, his positioning of the game? Does that speak more about the players around him when he's not there, the organising and what he was doing? Like, to me, it just showed the difference he could make, but it was his brain. It was his footballing brain that made the difference.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, Ruby, it's a funny one, because the older you get, obviously you're running out of time, but the older you get, the better you get as well. And he's a much better player now, Seamus, at 37 than he was at 20 starting off, and all the experience that he's built up over time. So that's kind of points to your game intelligence. What I thought was brilliant as well, not only about his positioning and helping the others, because to be fair to the manager, he said it a couple of times, that he makes the other players better around him as well, but it was his calmness and his composure. There was times there when we would have seen fullbacks over time, especially when you're under pressure, gladly just help a ball up the line. He played 2 or 3 balls inside that were kind of, you're going to yourself, I'm not sure would a lesser fullback have played that, or a fullback who would have been under a little bit of pressure, thinking I'll just be gladly kind of, especially when you had Ebisele in front of you, play it into the space and let him in run. But he played 3 or 4 balls inside to Malumbi and Cullen, and that gives them the feeling then that there's a composure here, that he's happy for me to receive the ball and for me to get on it and play the pass. And I just thought his all-round aura on and off the pitch, and people speak about it, he's a phenomenal character, Seamus. I remember playing against him when he was a kid starting off, and the one thing he said in that interview was his fire in the belly. He had all that. He didn't have the intelligence that he has now, but
who does?
No, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying about, he's built up over time. He's a brilliant, brilliant person, everything that you want in a footballer, everything that you'd want in a if you wanted him to come home, and if you had a daughter at home and say, Seamus, will you take her out? No problem, you would. He's a good lad.
I thought his leadership, like, it was brilliant just watching in. But like you've referenced his post match interview, and I listened to that. I thought it was so refreshing. It was so on point, and it just gave you a brilliant insight into his mentality. And you can see in terms of what the manager means that he makes everybody else better around him. When you have a guy on the pitch that is that calm, that exudes that type of leadership. But if you watch him in, you know, when like you said there, he played a couple of balls on the inside. He done some of that later on in the game as well, when you'd be thinking the legs are creaking or what. But it's just so evident, like, that what he brings, but his communication, I think, around the place as well. Even in, when you're looking at Ireland building up, you can see him. He's encouraging lads, he's moving lads on, and it's just incredible.
The proof is in the pudding as well. You don't have the longevity at the top level that he had unless you're something special. And there would have been players coming and going at Everton, plenty of money to buy players. He was a mainstay. Even Moyes last year said, look, he was asked about offering him a new contract. He more or less said, Seamus can stay here as long as he wants. Like,
I loved when he challenged in the interview, when, you know, they were saying, you know, your leadership, and then he was like, I think I bring a little bit more than leadership as well in terms of, so this is a guy that's, he's clearly backing his ability.
How annoyed he was.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought he showed his teeth, and I think that can be an inspirational kind of.
Because he jumped in on Tony, and he says, Tony, hold on, leadership, but I offered.
I can still play a bit of ball.
Yeah.
Don't you worry.
I can still knock it about.
Would, as a manager, would you lean on those players, like, in, I'm not saying pick individuals out, but saying Kula or any, or even your teammates, would you encourage management to lean on those players and get the most out of them, or would you leave them to their own devices and let that just take the player leadership in whatever guys he wants to?
I think it's really important that you draw that out of guys as well. You know, you give them that stage and draw it out of them and give them the back. And I'd be a huge believer in that, in terms of, there are always, I call them kind of your hot stones that kind of raise the temperature within a dressing room or whatever. And I think it's really, really important that, you know, you know, in terms of your senior leadership group, that you invest in them and you give them that power to bring guys on, because they'll do, not as a manager, a lot of the bidding for you, because you can't get to everybody, but they're guys that you just know that have the capability. And if you give them that platform and give them that back and allow them to grow as leaders as well, because most of the good guys, they want that responsibility. It doesn't suit everybody, but the good guys, I think
Austin as well, I think it's rare enough, those type of characters. You would think, with all the attributes that he brings, and young kids listen, or people say, oh well, they're the things you should be doing. Not everyone does them. And that's the problem you have with a lot of lads who kind of veer off to a different direction or whatever. And that's fine, everybody's different. But in terms of what Seamus, the level that he's at, and the level of kind of temperament that he gets, that they're rare.
Well, you just see the way he's carried himself through his club career as well. And like, I read a few bits about him before at Everton, obviously, and like the value they place on him there. And like, he's just an institution in terms of his...
It's on and off the pitch as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just what we see on the pitch. It's every day of the week.
Yeah, he sets
your behaviours, isn't it?
There's very few stars in any team that you don't see dictating games to other players. They're always pointing. Be it that it was Ronaldo on the other end, or it's Johnny Sexton playing rugby, or whoever it is. It's very few leaders in any pitch that you don't see that are not talking and pointing and communicating all the time. And it's communicating. Surely that's the biggest thing.
That is the biggest thing, the communication. Because even the manager spoke, you could only imagine Ruby what he's like around the hotel, the training sessions, the build up to the game, the little huddle before the match. So this is a continuous thing. This isn't just the 90 minutes that we see. He's kind of rallying the troops non-stop around the place. Plus he's also leading by example in how he behaves, Ruby. You would have younger players in the squad, say even the likes of Jake O'Brien starting off in his career, he's looking at Seamus every day of the week. Like, you can't help it. It's no more than, I'd say, Ruby, a young jockey looking at you, how you behave. It's the same thing. It translates to all the different sports.
I was competing against them. I wasn't trying to help them.
There's a huge actually piece in that, in terms of modelling, in terms of leadership and that, like that, where you said there, around younger players picking up on that and modelling themselves off that. And that's the biggest thing, you're leading by action, you know. I always said, like, words are one thing, but your actions as well around the place. And, you know, there's that moulding and modelling of particularly for younger players, and you're showing them and creating that example that they can.
Keane was always the biggest one for me, when you, and like, when you hear players of the level of David Beckham, Neville, Scholes, but every day they still look up to him like he's, you know, gold.
Yeah.
No. So the proof is, but Seamus, I just thought, what a weekend for him. And don't underestimate, like, he was playing against Pedro Neto, who was causing him a couple of problems. He was probably glad Neto was a dangerous character when he went over on the left in the second half. Rafael Leao, who's an exceptional talent. And for him, for a lad, the biggest thing for me was the fact that he isn't playing week to week. To go into a game of that magnitude, it was
at
phenomenal.
At 37 years of age.
Brilliant.
It's phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, but he was fresh as well.
He was.
Hopefully he's fresh for tomorrow. We'll
see if there's... Austin O'Malley, had you a highlight? It sounds like it was Seamus Coleman's interview, but there's something else.
Well, I had actually, yeah, look, there was, obviously it was a mammoth week across Gaelic games in terms of 8 county finals and that, and got eyes on most of them. And there was a couple of individual performances, I think, buried in that. That there was one in particular. Well, one collectively, I think, for me, was just, Dunloy winning the Antrim Championship for the first time in 89 years.
Whoa, incredible. 89?
89 yeah. years, incredible. But to think that...
And Aaron's Own were going for 4 in a row.
Aaron's Own, yeah, for 4 in a row. So these guys, but not alone that, the backstory of this as well, they had Dunloy had lost the hurling the previous week, and there was an overlap of 14 of these players that togged again the following weekend for the football. Now, Dunloy wouldn't, you know, it would be a footballing outpost. It would be, you know, obviously more famous for the hurling. Yeah. But I just thought what they done. But there was a standout performance in it, I thought, from their captain. He had 1-8, young Elliot, Sean Elliott. And just even in his interview afterwards, to see what it meant and the insight that he gave in terms of the week after losing the final, dusting themselves down, coming back in, and just the raw emotion and the hunger that they shown, to get it done. I just thought it was amazing. So that was one. There was one individual performance that I just literally was blown away by it, and it was actually a fellow countryman of our own, young guy Kobe McDonald, for his club.
Kieran's son.
Yeah. I've seen clips of him.
This guy put on an absolute clinic the weekend. He kicked 10 points in a senior semi-final. Game went extra time, Crossmolina lost, but he absolutely put on a clinic. 10 points. He's only 17. Right. He's been doing this now. He's been performing at this level. This is his first year in senior football. But just to see in the air, on the ground, the array of scores that he kicked, he just looked, he's supreme. But I just thought, for a young guy to step up and do that was extraordinary. Now, I know there was a lot of different notable performances across the club championship, but just from trap to line, that was a game that actually went to extra time as well, and Crossmolina lasted by 2 in the end to Westport. But he was phenomenal for a 17-year-old guy that's facing into his leaving cert. And I know in Gaelic games they're saying, they're too young or whatever. But like, when you've got it.
Oh, big shoes to fill. Big boots
huge
to fill.
Yeah, but he's a really
exciting
talent.
Did you play with Kieran, Austin?
I did, yeah.
How good was Kieran?
He was exceptional. He was exceptional. He was just so gifted, and some of the stuff that he pulled off in training nights, like, he would be
languid. That's how
I just there would be ribbons on the balls coming into you, like that. He was just literally it was just the pace, the way, the definite, like, he was an incredible operator. You know, he was gifted. And you know, I remember before an All Ireland final, I think it was 06. Was it a Tuesday evening? I think that was the best I'd ever seen him. He was just in an AB game. Yeah. It was just literally like.
Was he a good trainer?
He was. I was exceptional, and he was always in exceptional shape. You know,
okay.
Obviously his background would be done a lot, you know, physical labour, manual labour. Kept himself in incredible nick always, but he was different.
51552 is the text number. Brian texts in saying, weekend high is Carnew Emmets winning the Wicklow Hurling Championship for the first time since 2009, stopping Bray winning 7 in a row. We will be getting into all of county finals and a couple of upsets in semi-finals and quarter-finals a little bit later on, because it was a couple of replays in a few football finals as well, which was absolutely amazing stuff. Ruby Walsh, what caught your eye over the weekend?
What caught my eye is that momentum and momentum ties in with confidence, and I think they're the two most overused words in sport. And just listening to Austin there, Dunloy proved that. To get beaten in a hurling final last week, and 14 of them come out this weekend and win the football final. And the same goes for Munster Leinster. We listened to it all through the 2023 Rugby World Cup, and it was momentum, momentum, and confidence, and momentum, and Ireland still got beaten. Leinster are below in South Africa, getting hockeyed for 2 weekends. They land back in Viva with a few more players, and their backs against the wall, and in 21 minutes they've scored 3 brilliant tries. Like, confidence is only the ability to think in a positive way, and it just proves that if you're focused enough, you can be confident enough.
It's very, very
wise
valid
words from the one and only Ruby Walsh.
It's not Austin, would you agree?
100%, 100%. I have to agree, and I love that, the ability to think in a positive way in terms of to feeding your own confidence muscle. And I always feel like with that, it's your ability to guillotine past performances. And sometimes some of the greats are great at forgetting, I often say.
That is a skill.
Yeah, that it's absolute to be able to clear that inbox and just go again and not.
There's no future in the past, lads.
You say that about Scotty Scheffler, Ruby, don't they? He just as soon
bad. Don't know. I'll never met him.
No, but as soon as the shot is gone, he's just good or Ruben. Bad gone. On to the next one.
I'd love to be able to do it. Yeah.
What about you? What about you, Shane?
Speaking of leaders, Anya O'Gorman, Kylie Murphy, Karen Duggan, Rhianna Jarrett, Gemma Quinn, all hanging up their boots in the women's
team in itself.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Five girls, yeah.
That's some quality.
Absolute smashing footballers. We talk about leaders across the board. So they all retired at the weekend. And Anya, Kylie and Gemma all scored. So Rovers against Shells, it was actually a cracking match in Tallaght Stadium, 5-4, last minute winner for Shamrock Rovers. Anya opened the scoring, I think, off the top of my head. But she was on the score sheet, definitely. Gemma Quinn scored for Shelburne. She's only retiring from League of Ireland football, so we might see her line out for Clester, Dunycarney, or who knows where the future may lie. For Gemma and Kylie Murphy, an absolute Wexford legend, midfielder, forward throughout the years, and absolutely played all her senior career with Wexford, an absolute gem of footballer. Karen Duggan captained Piemont United, and again we talk about leaders, and she's, I think she won a couple of trophies, Camogie in Kilkenny Paradigia. As well, so a couple of different sports. And again Rhianna Jarrett, who came back playing in the league, but yeah, Anya in itself in particular, and obviously she might be probably Karen as well, playing football for Ireland and what they did in 2017 in Liberty Hall, and progression for women's football as a whole. But the leadership and Anya going to Shamrock Rovers and starting off, and Stephanie Roach now coaching there. So who knows, Anya might end up on the coaching ticket there. But we talk about players who are League of Ireland legends, and for nearly half a dozen of them to retire once.
I think, Shane, did I hear she was in with you yesterday?
She was on Sunday Sport.
Brilliant. It was a brilliant interview. I thought she came across really, really well.
Yeah.
And you could just tell the character of the woman, you know, again, and why she was around so long. I just thought she came across really well. There was some great.
She's a brilliant leader. We talked about that, and that kind of ties into Seamus and everything.
Longevity as well. Yeah. She's been around a long time on you.
Yeah.
She's like, she must be coming close to 200 caps, is she?
Ireland was 119 caps,
19,
I think. And that's, now she took a period out of the game and she went back to playing for Ireland. She called back into the squad, and that's why I put the question to her. I was like, is this retirement now? Because, you know, we've seen this before. She said, Amber Barrett was texting her as well, saying, are you actually retired this time, or what's the story? It's like, no.
But Alan, sounds like a great character as well.
Oh, she's brilliant.
Yeah.
You look at the budget last week, Alan, and the money that the FAI... not the FAI, that the League of Ireland teams got for coaching and academies, and it was to be divided between girls and boys. There's five women gone out of the league. Surely they're the kind of people they should be bringing back in with these grants.
Yeah, you would 100% expect it, Ruby. Like Shane has already touched on, Anya and Stephanie have a very close relationship, so it wouldn't surprise me to see Anya in the dugout with Stephanie. Karen obviously does the punditry with us as well, very, very knowledgeable, very, very good on the game, so you'd like to think there's a coaching role somewhere for the likes of Karen. Rhianna has done a lot of the punditry as well, and she's very, very good. So they have it, not only were they brilliant players, but they have a good knowledge of the game as well, Ruby. And again, going back to the point about what we were saying with Austin and Seamus, people to look up to, young girls to look up to them in terms of their career that they've just had, how to carry themselves, all the kind of good things we said about Seamus, you could attribute to all those ladies as well. So they've had brilliant careers, and you'd love to see them involved in some capacity, because as much as we're trying to grow the League of Ireland on the men's side, it's even lower down on the women's side in terms of where they're kind of starting from, Ruby. So they need all the help they can get as well, and I do know from speaking to the lads, some of that investment is going towards the likes of DLR Waves as well. There's 22 clubs, I think, that...
Well, that was in the budget now, so it has to.
Yeah.
Boys and girls teams. It wasn't just segregated for the lads.
Oh, 100%, and it will. I've from speaking to the boys involved, I know 100%. It's already kind of, they just have to tidy up the finer details in terms of how they're going to divide it up, but just in terms of when they're going to receive it, they're talking about hopefully before this side of Christmas. I'm not sure how true that is.
Very ambitious.
Yeah, but they obviously want it as soon as possible. But there'll be 100%, Ruby, like I know you had a couple of questions even last week before the announcement about will it be spent in the proper places. I know from speaking to the lads who have been behind this that it will absolutely go towards where it's meant to go.
Okay, well, here's hoping for a bright future for the League of Ireland, but across men's and women's football, indeed boys and girls academies across the country. We are going to be chatting Gaelic County Finals with Austin O'Malley a little bit later, but up next after the break, Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly are going to preview tomorrow's must win clash at the Aviva Stadium.
Game on. Association football.
Now, Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley are with us to chat football. Just to update you on the Cape Verde qualifying situation with our own Pico Lopez of Shamrock Rovers. They need to win against Eswatini to qualify for the World Cup. 69 minutes played. Cape Verde 2-0 up.
Ah, they're cruising.
2-0 up.
Pico's going to America.
Pico is on the way, and he starts centre half
Some story, that, isn't it?
Ah, it's brilliant, brilliant. So he is an expecting a child because he wasn't sure if he was actually going to be playing this match because his partner's expecting a new baby. So hopefully we wish him all the best. And, well, yeah, 22 minutes left in that one.
Big game in Belfast tonight, Al. Can Northern Ireland get anything off Germany?
I think they can, Ruby, yeah. I think Michael O'Neill has done a phenomenal job throughout his time at Northern Ireland. I think this is his second stint, but he's been absolutely phenomenal, so he has, yeah, and very competitive. Couple of, like, obviously they've Bradley now as well, Liverpool, Deveni from Crystal Palace. So there was a time there when he was kind of, it was slim pickings for them and he was still getting the best out of them. Now he has a couple of kind of real quality players as well, and you look at Germany, I suppose at the moment they're not the force that they once were. I was up in Windsor Park obviously during the summer watching the Shelburne matches as well. Lovely little stadium, so it'll be raucous atmosphere up there tonight, and the fact that they're going so well too. So I think that'll be a tough night for Germany up in Windsor Park tonight, because as I said, he's doing a really, really good job. I know out of the three matches they've 6 points, Germany, but Northern Ireland sitting on six as well, so it wouldn't surprise me if they got a draw out of that, Ruby, and I'd love to see it, Slovakia or the other team, on 6 points. So it's a tight group, and who would have thought they'd be in with a fight at this stage when it's only four teams. So fair play to Michael O'Neill and the lads up there.
I know, yeah, Wales or Belgium, they're flying as well. And Scotland, Al, are absolutely bombing too. So the home nations outside of ourselves could all end up at the World Cup.
Yeah, and dare I mention the Faroe Islands, Ruby. Oh. 7 points. Unbelievable results. Beat the Czech Republic as well there. So it just goes to show, I keep saying it about all these other nations, so-called minnows, improving, putting investment into what we're hoping to do here. But they have got the head start on us in a lot of nations, and they're reaping the rewards and the results. Scotland, now I have to say, were blessed against Belarus, and they were even more lucky against Greece. But how often do we hear it's
still 6 points?
And that's it, Ruby. How often do we hear it's a results based business? And Steve Clark got the 6 points, but they were
booed off.
They were
understated. Well.
They were terrible. Now
the expectations
terrible.
Still.
But yeah, he's doing, and I think
a win's a win,
and it just goes to show sometimes you should be careful of what you wish for, because Steve Clark got them to the Euros, and then they kind of stank out the place a little bit. They weren't great, but
still got to a major tournament.
But do you know what the Scotland fans are calling for now, even though he's getting the results? Oh, we want a better brand of football and a better style of football.
We heard that before.
This is what I'm saying. So be careful what you wish for.
Right, let's look ahead to tomorrow. Before we chat to Stephen Kelly, let's hear from Ireland boss Hamer Halgrimson.
I think we are all sharing the same feeling. We worked so hard to be in that position, to have a point against Portugal. Would have changed the mood to have a point. But listen, we've all been there before. We know what to do. We need to switch our focus to Armenia and leave everything else behind. We can take some of the positives from that match. I think this team has everything to qualify for the World Cup. We are not maybe the favourites in the group at the moment, but a win tomorrow would change that. And I believe that we are gonna do that. If you have seen the last game from Armenia where they went to Hungary. We know that this is a good team, and Hungary was lucky to go away with the win. Even at 1-0, Armenia had lots of good opportunities to punish, and it's just a good team. So never, ever anyone here underestimate Armenia. Yeah, result is the only thing that matters tomorrow, is the end result. However we do it, I would take play a shitty game and win 1-0. This is a result game, 100%.
Josh Cullen is going to miss the game through suspension. So how are you planning to populate your midfield?
Well, we normally rotate players when we are drilling in the approach to the Portugal game. So we have done that. We have also called in Conor Coventry, who plays the holding midfield role for Charlton. He's been doing that quite well this season. So yeah, we have options to replace him.
The result obviously disappointing, but the performance was a lot better. Are you considering keeping that shape?
Yeah, obviously we're not gonna tell you here how we're gonna play, but obviously this was good. One of the options probably even felt better for the players than usually when we change formation. So we felt comfortable defending, but like I said after the game, we need to improve in possession, the in possession part.
Hamer Halgrimson speaking there. Stephen Kelly, are you confident ahead of tomorrow's must win clash?
I always err on the side of caution now after being very confident the last time we played Armenia. I would like to think we absolutely can beat them at home. We were awful over there, and in the two other games against Hungary and Portugal, we put in much better performances. So if you get something similar to the way we played, you'd like to think we can go get the win. Lack of creativity issue, always an issue seems to be with us. Where are we going to get that from? But I feel if you... at home, it's dire straits if we're thinking that we can't go and beat Armenia. So I'm going to have my positive hat on slightly.
Can they handle the weight of expectation, Alan Colley?
We don't know, Shane, because of all the evidence that we've seen before when we were hoping that they could. The build-up to the campaign, the Hungary game, it seemed as though, look at the start they got off to in the first half against Hungary as well. So that weight of expectation that was on them going into that, all the positive vibes, all the hype, they failed. So that's why I suppose you're posing that question now, and it remains to be seen. I can't give you a clear answer because we haven't seen it yet, Shane. Hopefully we see it tomorrow night, but there is a lot of expectation on them, and it's a completely different game from Saturday night, because Saturday night was basically just shut up shop, and they did it very well. But that's the easiest part of football. If you're well organised and well disciplined, they had five at the back, four in front, obviously Ferguson up top on his own, but that's hard to break down no matter who you are, and that's why we've seen Portugal struggle with it. It completely flips on its head tomorrow night, because the onus is on us now to come out and create, try and score goals, try and create chances, and that's the hard side of football. And as Stephen said, in terms of the creativity, I definitely think we'll have to see a couple of players come in, the likes of maybe Smallbone could come into the middle instead of Cullen, potentially Troy Parra could come in because he has an eye for goal. I know he only got, was it 15-20 minutes the other night? So as I said, it completely flips on its head tomorrow night, but I'm hopeful, I'm very hopeful that the confidence they will gain from the performance the other night, that they can take that into tomorrow night and give a really good positive account to themselves, and hopefully get the result.
Okay, a somewhat quick turnaround from Saturday to Tuesday. Hamer was speaking about controlling the load on players today.
Yeah, so first of all, it's the load control. I accept the question. I've said it myself. This has been a trend, playing worse in the second game. And we as coaches want to find, you know, whatever we can do to change it. So the load from and recovery from game one to game two, that's one thing that we've been focusing on. It's another thing, rotation of players. So we managed to do substitutions last game. It was a tough game. So we managed to do substitutions maybe earlier than we would have, knowing this fact. But then again, just switching the players on. So mentally, if it's a mental thing, we switch the players on early, switch the focus to Armenia. That's the things we can do. And then it's down to player selection on the day. Is someone that is fresh better tomorrow than someone that played a game 3 days ago? That's what we can manage. But then it's just down to the players.
Alan Stevens spoke, or Stephen Allen spoke about changes. Heimer is talking about being aware of the load on people that played at the weekend. Do you see him making changes, or is he just talking about the load?
I think he's forced, going to be forced to make a change, obviously middle of the park with Cullen. So, and I'd be surprised if Coventry starts, you know, going from not being, we've seen it happen before, but going from being outside of the camp to come in. I know he's talking about potentially being in that position, but listen, most of these lads are born and bred in the Championship. This is, load is what they're used to. Like this, Colley will tell you this as well. Like you go Saturday, Tuesday every week almost. So I get this travelling involved and internationally in your hotel, and it's slightly different. You don't have the same routine. So that all changes. But there'll be no excuses for me to be able to get a performance out. And if you were comfortable with the team that you started against Portugal, you should be able to go in and start them all again. Obviously, minor if you have injuries or, you know, someone suspended. But if you're happy with that side and happy with the go, if you're going to change it based on criteria and what you're trying to achieve, and that may be a bit more of an attacking outlet because you're not going to be sitting back as much, that's one way to change things up. But load, I wouldn't be concerned about it. Yeah, in training, absolutely, you just have your feet up, you do a warm down, you cool down, you do a walkthrough for the next match. But everybody's used to that, we're all used to that at this stage in your career.
So Al, does he keep it tight for 50 minutes and then go after it?
No, I don't think so, Ruby. I think the onus is on us to go after them from the start without kind of being reckless and leaving ourselves exposed. We saw the damage that Armenia can do in the away leg. But I definitely think because of what's at stake, the fact that we have to win, I think you have to get the crowd involved from early. We're at our best when we're up and at them, Ruby. And that's something, even going back to the conversation about Seamus Coleman that he spoke about afterwards, that the performance the other night almost resembled Ireland in what we're good at, in being tough to beat, hard to beat, but we're also very good at getting in people's faces and being direct. If you want to maybe even throw a centre forward on in support of Evan, or do you play a parrot off him, or whatever the case may be. But I definitely think it has to be a fast start without being reckless. As I say, you have to be diligent because of what you're up against, and we know Armenia can cause us problems. But I think tomorrow night, and that's why I said how it flips from Portugal, the onus is on us to go out tomorrow night and really take the game to Armenia.
We always seem to perform when it's a bit of a, not a free hit, but when the pressure's off. But now that there is this expectation, Stephen, are you confident that Ireland can go out and dictate play, control chances, create chances?
Confident? No, absolutely not confident. Not in the way we've been playing. I would love to say I was confident that we can do it. Do I think we have the players that can cause Armenia threat? Yeah, of course we do. We have to be able. It's a sad day of Irish football if we don't have the players that can cause Armenia threat. I think it's interesting the fact that he talked about holding midfield player, because I think in the last Armenia game we were like so open. It was bonkers how wide open we were in the middle of the park. They just played through us. So I kind of get the impression he's thinking about playing someone just sitting there, which would allow those, and maybe that's Malumbi, that just breaks things up and energy and then allows players to go forward a little bit more and have a bit more of attack and threat and a free rein in the forward areas. But you know, those central areas were key and they overran us. But I'm not confident we can be very creative, but I know we have the players that on their day, like Troy Ferguson, Ogbene Ebisele, you know, even Mikey Johnson, these players, Will Smallbone, they're all very creative players. I've seen them all play all throughout the season and they're doing it for the clubs to an extent. They need to just do it for Ireland tomorrow and get that win over the Ryan. I'm on his wavelength. I don't really care how the game is. I don't care if it's ugly. I don't care if it's a wonderful performance. Get the win and get yourself in a position where you're it's looking a little bit more respectable.
Was that heartening to hear from an Irish manager, Al, that, you know, it doesn't matter about the result or about the performance, about the result. A shitty 1-0 win, that was exactly what he
said.
Yeah,
that's all that matters. He's clinging on to his job as well, Shane, so he doesn't care how it comes. Nobody's going to be judging him on the performance tomorrow. He'll be just judging on the result. And as I said, because it's been so poor up to now in terms of the group, they salvaged some pride on Saturday night, which was important. So I think they can take that confidence. But as I said, like Stephen, you're a little bit cautious to be too kind of overconfident, because what they did the other night, and I don't want to take away from it, but it is an easier side of the game if you're well disciplined. Now, mentally, you have to be tuned in. You're up against top players, but you should be able to sit in a bank of 5 and 4 in front of you and be well organised and disciplined to kind of carry out that destructive job, if you like. As I said, the hardest part is creating chances, and that's why I think you'll definitely see. I think Parrott will start tomorrow night because he has an eye for a goal as well. Ogbene might sit out. He could even go to a flat back four and put Seamus in and drop one of the centre halves. Mm. I don't think that would be a bad thing either.
Would you start Seamus? Would you start Seamus if he's
Seamus has to play? Yeah,
he has to.
Yeah. And again, he'd be one that you point at the load. Seamus, if you were sitting with Seamus right now in the hotel, he would be. He'd be devastated if you told him, oh, the Lord Seamus, he can't play. He is well able to play. He will want to play. And I think we need him as well off the back of the other night, because he almost gave everybody a lift with his performance as well. Mm. So I definitely think you could see a back four, which would allow you to get an extra player, maybe go with a 4-3-3, three in the middle, and sit Malumbi and get two attacking players either side of him. You could get Ebisele on the right, Johnson on the left, and have Evan up front. That would excite me if you've seen that team tomorrow night.
I thought Jason Malumbi did very well against Portugal, Stephen. And you mentioned if he is going to, when you look at the midfielders, I highly doubt Conor Coventry is going to come in to start in the team.
No.
If he's only called up to the squad. So is Jason Malumbi good enough to be that sitting midfielder that can give you that reassurance in midfield?
Yeah, you know what, he's been playing well for West Brom. He's been arguably one of their best players this season so far, and he's been more adventurous in what I've seen him a few times this season, in the way he plays, less sideways and backwards, but like forward playing and just energetic. And I know he was absolutely devastated to be out of the squad the last time round, and I felt his performances warranted him to be in it. So I think he has a point to prove, which is always nice. I think if you have a player coming in that wants to show I deserve to be here, that's a great little thing to be able to chuck in as well. And I think, you know, he's combative, and I think the player, if you can see him in front, you know he's got the energy, you know he's going to make tackles. Keeping it all above board at times with Jason is something that you have to keep all up. I think he's learned lately as well. So I think that'd be a decent one. And that might give us the platform, especially to be able to go and attack. And if you go to a back four, just give us those extra few players in the forward areas where we can try and be so creative or press, or even like that we didn't press them last time. And that I was their goalkeeper was so bad on the ball, and we didn't press them. He gave the ball about 7 times away without being pressed. And I was looking, thinking, what are we doing? Whereas at home, surely we're going to go after them early on and try and win the ball back up in their half.
Get the crowd on side and see what happens. Alan Colley, would you take 1-0 right now?
100%, I'd snap your hand off for it, Ruben.
take any win.
Yeah, because it keeps the whole thing alive then, you know, because the likelihood is that we're not going to get anything from Portugal. You would like to think Hungary will beat Portugal, and it could come down to a shootout with Hungary, which would be amazing, really, when you think of, I suppose, the doom and gloom that was around the place off the back of the Armenian one. So if you're handing me a 1-0 now, Ruby, I'm taking it all day long.
90th minute winner, Stephen Kelly, coming off someone's arse. Yeah, you take it this
all day long. You don't care, just get out there with a win tomorrow by hook or by crook, and then let's go again. That's it.
Well, this is a team that has conceded 18 goals in their previous four games, capitulating.
You gotta kill us now, Shane.
Capitulating against Portugal 5-0, Kosovo 5-2, and Georgia 6-1. So we shall see.
I don't think this should be disrespected, Armenia. We saw
absolutely.
We
not.
Saw the damage, and we're in no position to be disrespecting anybody.
No, we've absolutely no right. And I wasn't being disrespectful. I'm just
no, I don't.
Just
I don't mean
some
you,
facts
Shane.
There.
I mean in general the country, because you'll have a lot of people rock up tomorrow night and think, oh, we should just roll Armenia over. It doesn't work like that.
Over 45,000 tickets sold for tomorrow. A match you can hear live commentary of on an extended game on 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock tomorrow. Stephen Kelly, thank you for joining us this evening. Alan Colley, before we wrap up our football chat, some team news in from the League of Ireland Men's Premier Division match this evening. Cork City against Shelburne. For Shelburne, Wessel Spiel, Harry Wood, Mark Coyle, John Martin, Ali Coote, Dan O'Kelly, James Norris, Jack Henry Francis, Kerr McEnroy, Lewis Temple and Milan Mbeng returns to Cork City. And for Cork, Odomuso in goal, Fiacre Kelleher is captain, Lyons, Bulger, McLaughlin, Nolan, Nelson, Crowley, Fitzpatrick, Maguire and Feely is the starting 11. Again, that is in numerical order, not positions on the pitch. How do you see this evening going? Cork City could be relegated.
Yeah, I think they've already accepted that, Shane. So
officially.
So I don't think that will concern them. I think their most kind of concerning thing at the moment is minding the players for the cup final, but also trying to maintain the momentum that obviously they've had in the last couple of weeks, most notably in the semi-final, that brilliant performance. So I think it'll be a tough game for Shelburne. But I think, as I said to you there last week, the result against Shamrock Rovers puts them in the driving seat. And they'll be very disappointed if they don't go to Cork and kind of hammer that point home and get the 3 points and put themselves right in contention for that European place.
The win tonight and second place is back in play. You always give out to me for being negative. So
there you go, Shane. I love it.
On that positive note,
I love it. There you go.
Alan Colley, thank you.
Thanks, lads.
We are going to take a short ad break. Austin O'Malley is still with us. We're going to run through all of the drama of the weekend's county finals.
Game on, 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. We have some swimming news to break you. Irish swimmer Shane Ryan has joined the Enhanced Games, a controversial competition that permits athletes to take banned performance-enhancing drugs under medical supervision. The first Enhanced Games is due to take place in May 2026 at a purpose-built complex in Las Vegas. The complex will have a 4-lane 50-metre pool, a 6-lane sprint track and a weightlifting stage. Each event will have a total prize purse of $500,000. Dollars. So in June, important to say, World Aquatics announced it will ban athletes, coaches and officials from its events if they've taken part in the Enhanced Games. So Swim Ireland has issued a statement in response to Ryan's announcement. It reads, Swim Ireland is committed to elevating our world ranking through dedication, innovation and adherence to the highest standards of clean competition. We believe that true athletic excellence is achieved through hard work and fair play, and we remain steadfast in our commitment to Sport Ireland and what is anti-doping regulations. In that light, we are disappointed by Shane Ryan's decision to sign an agreement with the Enhanced Games, and can advise that in line with his retirement in October, he's no longer associated with Swim Ireland's national team, and further to that, will not be provided with any funding or services by the NGB going forward. Shane Ryan himself has said, after a decade dedicated to traditional competition on the world's highest stage, he's excited to dive into the next chapter with this Enhanced Games. So the full story is on the RTÉ Sport website.
There's a £1 million bonus in there also for any competitor to break world records in the 100 metre sprint on the track or 50 metres freestyle in the pool. Now, how anybody who's at an Enhanced Games where brands performance enhancing drugs are permitted can be actually breaking a world record is beyond belief. It, in my simple mind anyway. Austin, any opinion?
I think it's madness, and this popped up a while back. I remember looking at it and reading at something again, and it just, look, for all of us, I suppose, they're involved in sports down through the ages and the years, you know, and you're trying to do everything the right way. It's just the ground is shifting, obviously, and I don't think it's a progressive move in terms of where that's going at all.
I think it's sad and disappointing, to be honest with you.
It really is, yeah.
No, it's not a great look. Listen, we have 5 minutes left in the show. I do want to pick your brain on some drama over the weekend. Let us
Lots
begin
of drama, yeah.
In Clare, the Clare football final, Eire Óg Ennis, 35 years, and they win a hurling title, landmark moment, and now they are double champions, four football title in as many seasons.
Yeah, incredible, an incredible week for the club. And you know, they lifted obviously the Jack Daly Cup on Sunday, and they I think they brought the Cannon Hamilton Cup on stage as well. So they had both of them there after securing that the week before. But Dura Bearfield pushed them for long stages of that, but they just had a huge last quarter. They hit 1-8, and I think Dura Bearfield hadn't, you know, didn't register, I think, from the 44th minute on. So a big last quarter, and it's been a huge week in the Innes club's history. You know, they've done a double, and again, I think, you know, just we talked about Dunloy having 14 players overlap, and they had 8 from the previous week. I think 6 started and 2 came in, so
they had to curtail the celebrations. They didn't have the added motivation.
They didn't, yeah, exactly. But I'd say this week will be hopping in Innes. I've a feeling.
I'd say it was a good Monday club anyway. Kings Court beat Gowna in Cavan. Yeah, good old Kings Court. I said it was a good party in the Oasis last night.
I'd say there was. Yeah, I'd say there
if
was.
It's still open.
If it's still open. The Oasis or whatever venue is or whatever hostelry is open there, I'd say it was rocking last night. This was big, obviously, on the back of Gowna beating them in 2023 by put a right number on them, beat them by 17 points. So it was a huge moment for Kings Court. I don't think they have secured a crown in maybe close to a decade, but they were very much driven home by Jordan Morris. He had 8 points, and obviously he's a Meath senior, and he's a serious footballer. We've seen him with Meath last year and what he'd done there. So that was a big result, and probably a shock given that everybody kind of thought Gowna was odds on to do that. So yeah, big one.
You also were keeping an eye on the Donegal football final. It went to extra time. Some finish.
This was an incredible game. And even listening to Finn Burr Rotary afterwards, who was man of the match, and he's also obviously up for Young Footballer of the Year. But Niamh Connell were super. Like, they were 7 down at one stage. Just the heart and the courage and the determination they showed to hang in there. And you know, there was one scene in the game at one moment where Guidor, you know, the green flares had been lit. They thought they were home and hose, but no, these guys dug in. And they really unloaded a lot of youth off their bench, and it really brought them home. And
it was a late 2-pointer, wasn't it? Took the
match to extra time. Huge moment, and they drove on from there. But like, they have a lot of pedigree. I think Martin Regan is their manager, and if I'm not mistaken, I think he's landed 6 titles since he took over in 2014. So I think they've made it into 11 finals or something. So a huge moment for them there, and huge excitement up there in the Glenties.
Yeah, no, massive congratulations. Great actual narrative to that one as well. Also, you enjoyed this. 20 years ago, Dave Cunnell shocked Unions to win a first title after replay. Since then, they featured in 13 finals, now champions for the 8th time. And in 2005, Brendan McDyer forced a replay, and a 38-year-old who featured in every campaign since scored a 2-pointer early on in the match.
Wow. So, oh my God.
We talked about longevity. We started the show, and we're going to end the show.
Close it out. Well, fair play. And I'd say he's leading the Monday club.
Yeah. Well, enjoy the celebrations wherever you are in the country if you did win a county final over the weekend. Austin O'Malley, thank you for your company this evening. That is all we have time for this evening. Massive thank you for listening. Game On is back tomorrow with live commentary of Ireland's crucial World Cup qualifier against Armenia in the company of Kenny Cunningham, Pat Fennan and Keith Tracy. Mark Langdon has the latest football news from around Europe. We'll have a feature interview with Jonathan Wilson on the history of the World Cup, and Ruby will be speaking to William Buick as well. So lots to look forward to. Today's Game On was produced by Ronan Lawler. Our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. Up next here on 2FM is a new music show, so do not go anywhere. From myself, Ruby, and all of the Game On team, have a great evening. Bye for now.
This is 2FM.